We begin the hour by getting on the telephone line and welcoming in our friend, writer Colin Fleming. Hello there, Mr. Fleming.
What's up, Rich?
Well, I look forward to you, you've teased it on the social media, you unveiling your brand new catchphrase today. Is it, I'm only guessing, is it, get out of my way, this is my monument?
As you know, my friend, I dominate social media as somebody who writes for so many places, and I think I have 90 followers on Twitter after a year and a half. So at my current rate, we're looking to hit 100 in another year or two. So it's pretty exciting. So I thought I'd tease this to my base, and I do. I have a slogan, catchphrase.
Yes.
I've been working on it. You have to stick with me because it's kind of a two-part catchphrase. There's a dot, 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 an ellipse in the middle.
I like that.
And now you're going to hear the first part and you're going to get nervous and think, oh, no, we've gone too far this time. We're all in trouble, but just I'll get us where we need to go, Kimball.
I'm confident.
Let's get you penetrated with knowledge, right? So then I'm going to help you out. I'm going to do your family solid. Because I figure you could put Graham through college, and I could get my house back in Rockport with a T-shirt line. And on the front, right?
Yeah.
It says, Colin Fleming gets you penetrated on Downtown with Rich Kimball. And on the back for the graphic, it's just my mouth. It's a gape, right? But it's not my mouth that's being penetrated. It's my words that contain the knowledge. So coming out of the back of my throat would be like this harpoon. And on the side of the harpoon, it just says, penetration. Right?
Hello, is that the FCC? Oh, come on in.
No, we've struck a new argot in this country. Soon people will be saying, hey, there's a Jean Renoir film festival tonight at the Harvard Film Archive. Want to go and get penetrated? Right? See? This is going to be big. I feel like I'm on my way now.
Well, look, I'm in there. We'll do the T-shirts. I think you have a winner right there.
You got that downtown merch. Add this special apparel line. And we'll have disclaimers on the merch page for the website saying, look, we know there's kind of like a connotation here of harpooning whales and some other things that maybe don't look right at first. But listen to some Billie Holiday. Open up to being penetrated. And then everybody will say, in the end of our segments, I can say to you, Rich, were you penetrated? And you can say, Colin, I was. I definitely was.
Deeply, yes. Well, look, I don't even want to explain it to people. If they're not on the team, they don't need to know what's going on, and they can have their little chitter-chatter about what we're doing. The insiders will know the real story.
And what are you going to do? You can't make my Twitter base any lower.
Right.
I figured, you know what? Like Dylan said, when you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. So, to mix metaphors, chuck it down the field into double coverage every now and again. And I'm chucking it, Rich.
We are going to penetrate that defense. There's no question about it.
You get it.
Well, we want to talk about the blog this week. And we've talked about it a couple of times before, but a different aspect of the Many Moments More blog today. And that's this notion of, what you have referred to as the culture vulture.
I did, because like you said, we've spoken about the blog before. And if people haven't gone, really, shame on you. Come on, give you all this free information, entertainment all the time. It's free to go to the blog, and you can read these ones. It's free for now. Read all this wonderful stuff. It sounds like this kind of full-throated shout from the abyss, maybe, of certain things that I've gone through, the way we've discussed it on this program, and also a takedown of the corruption and an expose of the bigotry that runs rampant in publishing. But there's really a lot more to it. And I was thinking about this because what it does is it documents a life lived in art, steeped in art, not just the creation of art. And this is what was written today. This was the short story. This is how it was come about. This is what happened with the editor. This is me talking to Rich in a conversation we had behind the scenes. But somebody who lives their life immersed in music and film and is out in the woods and is at the ballet and the museums and is sharing all of this experience. And I think it's pretty great. Not only do you get all these wonderful recommendations for these things that, let's face it, a lot of people wouldn't know about nowadays. And it's not because they're old things and it's not to slag off people. It's just we tend to be more than ever oriented around that which is pushed in front of our faces, what's trending on Twitter. And that's so often the same dozen things. It's whatever comes out on Netflix that we're going to binge watch for 9 hours over that weekend. So I am in so many different areas of art all the time. And I thought, you know what, I'll write about these things. I'll write about what I'm at this period in my life when I'm alone. I'm going to many of these things by myself, if not all of them. And then I'm also giving my insight on how this Japanese horror film from 1999 functions and why you should check it out. And this great Western that you probably never heard of, that this psychological thriller via the Old West. And then sometimes I'm also talking about how I might go to a concert and how that can become, within my own purview of creation, a short story that I write. And how can you just go to this concert that nine people are at and it's Beethoven's Last String Trio? How does that become a way, an impetus, an inspiration to create a new form of short story that nobody's ever done before? So I think there's a lot there. Just on that level, quite apart from the other things that we've discussed.
Well, and that last part is a very interesting point to me, because I think as a lover and appreciator of many things artistic, I still have a different perspective. How does an artist partake of art in a different way than someone else?
Sure. Now, I think, too, that it's inspiriting to get people out, because here you have this guy. And he's not like some 500-pound rotund person who's just this social outcast. This looks like somebody who is in the prime of life. They're fit. They're going up and down the monument. But they're alone right now. And they're going to these things on their own. And they're sitting next to people at many of them on their own. And they're able to do that. And if they're able to do that, I think other people can be helped do that too. But I was at something like Sandra's Theater out at Harvard. And it was, like I said, it was this program of, one of the compositions was Beethoven's Last String Trio. And he was going to move away from the trio, and he was going to write his string quartet, which number among the greatest artistic achievements in human history. And the reason he's going to move away from the string trios is because he thought with this last one, he had bettered anything Mozart had done in the form. It's kind of interesting, right? You think like, okay, I've checked that off. People would call it maybe a genius bucket list. I don't know. And so in the final movement of this string trio, it's bitonal. And what that means is the music is simultaneously in two different keys. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about that. It doesn't happen very often. And I thought, okay, what happens if you write a short story, call it bitonalities, that's in two keys at once? So maybe somebody is coming to a concert like this one. You could even use this concert. And they're having a memory which takes a short story form within the story of something that happened to them at another time at the same outing. And so you're in one key at once, you're in the present tense, and you're in this other key at the same time, and then you keep shifting along like the music. And the prose itself, sonically, can be in two different keys at once. And you build up this entire story that ultimately has nothing to do with this Beethoven piece, save that it launches this two-fork path. And everything is happening in these two simultaneously. You're in the future and the present at the same time. You're in the present and the past at the same time. And so that's just one example of something that's very typical with what I do, because I'm never just going to something or watching something and thinking, oh, okay, I need to slap this sticker on my suitcase like in the travel days of yore. I'm thinking, all right, how does this pertain to me? How is this director here, this Orson Welles, he's using this kind of camera cover. Now, if I was going to adapt a short story of mine, how would I film that scene? What kind of coverage would I give that? Would I just dispense with the master shot? Would I move the camera? And so you get this very lived-in kind of art, which isn't just like somebody bragging of, huh, I was at Beethoven's Last String Trio, and it's in two keys at once, and I'm very impressive. Do you love me? Boost my Twitter following. So it's quite a bit different, I think, than what anyone else is doing or writing about. And it's inclusive, conversational. It's not like, well, Colin, I don't know anything about Beethoven. Don't need to. Everyone is welcome within, and I think it's very, not chatty Cathy, but you would never feel like it's going over your head.
Talking with Colin Fleming on Downtown about his blog, Many Moments More, and I often think of your blog as a clearinghouse for the arts as well, and just about every entry I hear about something, I learn about something that either I wasn't aware of or I feel the need to dig deeper into. And today, or recently, you mentioned a film that I had heard nothing about, a new movie that you saw over the weekend, Light from Light, with Jim Gaffigan, and it sounds like it was very good.
It really was. I went to two films on Sunday at the Brattle. I got up, and this is what my life looks like in Aloneville right now. And I wrote a short story. I write it from scratch, and I just do it. And I've done two more since then. So three short stories this week, or since Saturday. I walk my 3 miles. I go up and down the monument, as it were, 10 times that day to get a good start to the week, because things are going to go bad pretty soon. And when all of that was done, I went out to the Brattle, and I went there for two films. And one of them was Ringu, which is this late 20th century Japanese horror film. And it's about, you've probably seen, most people have seen the American remake of it. It's just called Ring.
Yep.
And it's about this haunted videotape curse, essentially. And then after that was the film you mentioned, Light from Light. And I was surprised, in some ways, not in others, to learn that it only grossed $24,000, which obviously isn't a lot of money, but it's about this guy in Tennessee, and he has this old house, and it was passed down through his wife's family, and he lives there, and she's dead, and she died in a plane crash. And he reaches out to a local priest, and he says that, I think my wife is still here. She's inhabiting this structure somehow. And the priest reaches out to this woman who used to do paranormal research, and she works now at a, she always worked all along as a full-time gig at a rental car place. She comes out, and she does this pro bono to help this guy out. And you find out as it goes along, she has a young kid and she means well, but maybe she's not the best parent. And it's just four people, because the kid has a little girlfriend, and they're, it's just a four person, speaking of quartets, type of thespian deal. And you find out that this guy's wife was not supposed to be on this plane, that she was supposed to be driving to Cincinnati, and she had cheated on him before, and that's who she was with. And he learns that, so he's kind of torn about whether or not, it's a wrinkle that I didn't see coming, and it's clever, and it's not a gimmick, and it's just this very organic ghost story. Look, the best ghost stories, here's the secret to ghost stories. They don't really involve ghosts. They kind of do, but they don't. Mm. They're always about other things, and there is a collection of ghost stories from the early 20th century was titled Not Exactly Ghosts. So you can be like, oh, that's a ghost, but, and again, could be this other thing, The Innocents, that type of film. And it's like that, but it's very organic, and it's about these four people, and it's who, some of whom are never going to know each other again. They go up to the crash site, and it's just one of those films, when it's over, at least for me, I don't get up right away. I'm going to sit there for a couple minutes like I've been welded to the chair.
That's excellent. I wanted to ask you, actually, this last week, and I forgot to at the time, but when you're writing short stories, and you've, as you said, you've written so many of those recently, in the last several months, you write very quickly and efficiently, as well as at an incredibly high quality. But do you do drafts, or does this just come forth because so much of it develops in your head? Does it come forth in a final draft?
I don't do drafts, and it doesn't necessarily. Now, everyone out there in publishing land, they want to do things when I say that. They want to think, well, they must suck. I have to do 508 drafts before it's any good. And I would say to that person, look, some people are just born with infinitely more ability than you have. It's not their fault. And they work at it, and they work harder than you even work it with what you have. It's not close. They work exponentially harder with infinitely more ability. So that's why there's no comparison. But also, they're not necessarily things that I work up in my head. They can be things that I just sit down and I'm going to write one. The one I wrote yesterday was about this girl, and she's 6-7 years old, and it's narrated by her mother. And the story is called Mateus. And she has these migraines, and it appears that she has a brain tumor that the doctors haven't picked up yet. And the mother is kind of mentored in parenting by this woman who lives across the street, who's 15 years her senior, who lost a daughter after she graduated from college of a lung disease. And so they don't know what's wrong with this kid. And she's in bed for days, for weeks. She misses school. And eventually this kid on her own goes underneath her bed. And it seems that the headache is completely relieved underneath the bed, where she has this imaginary friend, we think, named Matthias. And he's doing something to her that would make any mother horrified the way the child describes it. And she puts it in the phraseology of, he goes up into me. So the mother's terrified of what's happening, but at the same time, the child is not giving in to this horrible condition. In fact, later it's going to save her life in a way. So talk about being torn. Now, that wasn't something I worked up in my head. And it sounds like I've been thinking about this for years. But I just sat there and I said, what can you do for me? What can you produce that's always going to be around? Give me something today to keep hanging on. And I do it. And I know at the same time that this industry is going to depress whatever it is because it has my name at the top and it's also not written like the pablum that they publish. Even though I know anyone out there would love this story, would love any of these stories, any quote-unquote normal person. You don't have to be that normal to love these stories. So, but it's a lot of time over a lot of years, and I've been working at this since I was 2 years old. I knew who I was at two or who I was going to be. And everything, all the recesses I stayed in from when I was in third grade was to do this. So it can be a variety of things. I can be going up and down the monument, and ideas come to me, and I develop them over many years. Who knows? It's always different, but it always gets to the exact same place in the end, qualitatively.
And this is a fairly unimportant piece of what you do, but I really believe, Colin, more social media followers would be there if you wore a scarf in your profile picture.
Yeah, I did post something on the blog about a lot of the people I deal with are the kind of people who wear scarves inside. And now they all have this conference they go to, which is not technically canceled this year, but it's almost canceled. It's called AWP. And all of these people with no ability go to this conference, and they trade favors, and they talk patriarchy and how bad men are and all of that stuff, and they just publish themselves in their little journals that nobody reads where they tell me to pay $3 to be read by an undergrad, even though I've published 2,500 things literally in my life. Because they see that and they think, not on my watch, boyo, you're not getting in here, I hate you. And so they go to this conference, and I'm thinking, they're all just on Facebook. Are you going to the conference? I can't wait to talk about how I birthed my new short shorts collection. It's like, nobody wants to read your garbage. But if any of you went out, listen to a Beatles album, go see 310 to Yuma. Go see any of these things we're talking about. Listen to Beethoven's string quartets. You will get vastly more out of that than you will dressing up inside with your indoor scarf. Do not trust people. Look, you trust people who played hockey and who like the ocean. They're usually good people. Do not trust people who wear scarves ironically or fetchingly or poetically inside. Yeah, so that was one of the posts on there, too. There's a range of things. Get me to 100 Twitter followers downtown here.
Penetrating insight, as always, from Colin Fleming. The blog, many moments more. The website, ColinFlemingLit.com. And just at Colin Fleming Lit out there in the Twitterverse. And expand your mind and your world. Colin, thank you, as always, my friend. Let's do it again next week.
All right, stay penetrated.
Indeed.